Welcome to another episode of 30 Minutes in the New Testament. 30 Minutes in the New Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast. You can go to 1517.org/podcast and check out all the other podcasts that are living over there. Check out 40 Minutes in the Old Testament if you're into that old school stuff. You can check out The Thinking Fellows. You can check out the daily podcast, Christian History Almanac, to get a little dose of history, 5 minutes at a time, every morning. I listen to it every day. I actually listen to that podcast every day when I wake up. I'm getting my coffee. I'm getting my church history on. It's great. Also, while you're over there, you might want to check out the events page because we got city events coming up. We're going to be in Houston, February 22nd. Me, Chad, Loso, Scott Keith, Gretchen Ronovic, Matt Popovitz. You can check it out. It's all free. All you got to do is register. The registration is right there. Click on it. Type in your name so we know you're coming. We would love to see you down in Houston. Just a month later, on March 21st, we're going to be in Las Vegas. Eric will be there. I'll be there. Scott Keith, Adam Francisco, Cindy Koch, Blake Flatley. We're going to be talking about the book of Galatians. 6 speakers, 6 chapters, 1 day, all free. Galatians and Sin City. Come on and register. It is free as well. Get that lunch. I happen to know at this specific event that the lunch there is going to be Scott Keith's favorite lunch.
His favorite lunch. What is, okay, reveal to the listeners.
Oh, right, I can't now. Reveal it. I'll reveal it to you what off is Scott air. I can't reveal it. Like, what if it falls through? I don't think it will. This. I don't think it will, but be excited. Be very excited. It's Scott Keith's favorite place to go.
It's gotta involve some meat. That's all I know.
It's great. So, yeah, you
got In-N-Out Burger.
No, it's not that, dude. No, it's not that, but it's something good. So you want to be there. Register up over there and we will see you in Las Vegas and Houston. All right, Eric, here we are in Luke, plowing away.
Yes, sir, Dan, we are plowing away. We're in Luke chapter 4, and we're picking it up at verse 38 today. How you doing, man?
Well, it's snowing all over the place.
Snowing in Arkansas 2 weeks before Thanksgiving.
Indeed.
What's going on?
Dude, I'll tell you what, like, this is sort of a contract that you have when you lived in the South. And now I don't live in the South, but I still live in technically the South. I live across that line. And it's not supposed to snow before Thanksgiving. It's not part of the deal with living here. This is still the fall, as far as I'm concerned. December, none of this before December. But, you know,
the fact that you guys have gotten snow before us up here in New York City is nuts.
Well,
that's pretty amazing. I mean, usually this is definitely reversed.
Yeah, I think it's coming your way. And the thing is, man, it's freezing outside. Right now it's like 25 degrees. It's going to get down. I mean, it's going to get down to like 12 degrees. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Man, I so love the fall. I love it. I love it. I love it. But it just always feels so short.
It's not supposed to be.
I mean, it just goes down. It goes away in a blink.
That's not how it's supposed to be where I live. There's a reason I live here. So I'm very frustrated with this entire thing. Yesterday, it was 70 degrees. Yesterday afternoon, I was in a t-shirt raking leaves in my front yard. And now my yard is covered in white stuff and it's below freezing down there. It's just ridiculous.
Dan, I can hear as our listeners in the Midwest are listening to you complain about this, them just crying rivers of tears in sympathy for you.
Hey, they made a choice of where they're going to live. Like, I live here for a reason, and this is a violation of the agreement that I have with the area I live in.
Well, I guess I can say there is some truth to that. Everybody who's ever lived in the Midwest, including myself, knows that you're signing up for many, many months.
Exactly.
Snow and cold.
I'm getting something I did not sign up for here.
All right. Well, sorry you're going through that, man. It's nice and warm up here. I mean, it's in the 50s, so I'm not
great.
All right. Picking up Luke chapter 4, verse 38. And he arose. Of course, he here is Jesus and left the synagogue and entered Simon's house. Now, Simon here, of course, is Simon Peter, the disciple of Jesus that will end up really being the one that Jesus appoints sort of as the leader of the early church. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was ill with a high fever, and they appealed to him on her behalf. And I love this verse, Dan, because it's so simple, and yet almost it in its essence describes kind of what happens when someone encounters Jesus. And he stood over her and rebuked the fever, and it left her, and immediately she rose and began to serve them.
Now this sounds pretty crazy. Like, this must have been not just like, hey, the fever seems to be going away, but she must have been feeling like 100% better.
Yeah, this there was no process here. She just boom, got up and started serving. But I love that because it's like it gives me the picture of what happens when someone is justified or brought to life from the dead. You know, it's a great little illustration of that. So it reminds me of conversion immediately. Yeah, word immediately.
He doesn't rebuke it also and tell her to serve them.
No, it's just instinctive.
There's no command. Dick, let me rebuke this fever so we can get some sandwiches going. This is not how it works. He just rebukes it and she says, "Let's get some sandwiches going." That's right.
Yeah. It really is a great picture.
Yeah, and this also is how we know. And this is the only, and this of all the disciples, this is the only one that we have this of. We know that, in fact, Peter was married. Now, Peter is mostly considered to be probably the oldest of the disciples. Mm-hmm. And I would contend that all the disciples are younger than Jesus.
I think so too.
A lot of times in the illustrations, you have Jesus being the young guy, and he's got all these like middle-aged dudes around him. But if you look at the lifespans, this is not likely the case. So Jesus is probably older. They're younger. But it seems as though Peter is the only one that we have evidence of being married. I think probably for the most part, they weren't married. These are younger guys.
Yeah. And the Apostle Paul alludes to this fact when he's talking about his own ministry. And he says, you know, I have the right to be married. I've chosen not to be married for the sake of the ministry. He's making that kind of argument. Of course, we know from this passage here that he's probably talking about Peter when he says that, because it was a well-known fact that Peter was indeed married to a woman. And this is one of those passages that evidences that.
Yeah, well, this is also maybe one of the reasons that Peter stays put for the most part. Yeah. So most mm-hmm. of his ministry is going to take place locally, whereas
until the end.
Yeah, whereas Paul is going to go travel all around. This is maybe a note to make. Not saying you have to be single to be a missionary, but if you look at the Bible, it makes it easier, apparently.
Well, again, Paul talks about that same thing. He even says, I wish all of you were not married so that you'd be more free to go out and do ministry like I can do, you know. But then in the same passage concedes that's probably not going to happen for the vast majority of you. So that is a reality, though, and Peter seems to illustrate that. So verse 40, now when the sun was setting, all those who had any who were sick with various diseases brought them to him, and he laid his hands on every one of them and healed them. And demons also came out of many, crying, "You are the Son of God." But he rebuked them and would not allow them to speak, because they knew that he was the Christ.
More of this, which we discussed last week. He does.
That's right, yeah. This is that principle again of him not allowing the demons to be the ones that will proclaim his messiahship to the world.
And interesting that the demons know that he doesn't want them to do this, so this is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, so this is not them crying out in glory. This is not them crying out in praise. This is them crying out seeking to do something that he doesn't want, and so he goes further.
Not even a crying out in horror or even an acknowledgement that he's the Son of God, not like, oh no, the Son of God has arrived, and they freak out. It's like I've heard people talk about this, like they can't help themselves, and they proclaim that this is no. This is them trying to do the thing.
This is their last gasp effort in fighting him.
Yeah, they're saying, I'm going to do you're going to have to cast me out, but on my way out, I'm going to try to do the one thing that you don't want, and that's to have the proclamation of who you are on the lips of the demons, and he's not ready to come out with that yet.
Yeah, he has a plan for how he's going to do that. Luke will actually show us this. I mean, when we get to chapter 10, you'll see him send out his disciples two by two. You'll see him. Jesus chooses the instruments that he wants to use to bring glory to his name. He chooses the means and method for how to do that. So verse 42, and when it was day, he departed and went into a desolate place. And the people sought him and came to him and would have kept him from leaving them. But he said to them, I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God to the other towns as well, for I was sent for this purpose. And he was preaching in the synagogues of Judea. Now, just to note here, when it says in verse 42 that he departed after doing all this healing and then went into a desolate place, probably the reason he did is because he wanted to rest. He Somebody asked me the other day, Dan, if I thought Jesus was an introvert. And I thought it was an interesting question. One of the things that made me think maybe he kind of was would be a passage like this. And you see this not just here, but a few different times where after he's with this large crowd of people, he's doing all this work with them, he's talking to them, healing them, that he has to get away, that Jesus has to go away, in this case, to a desolate place, either to pray to his Father or just to rest, just to take a break from all the crowds that are so demanding of him.
Yeah, I think more than like saying, you know, showing whether he's an introvert or an extrovert or whatever, I think it just shows that he's human. Like, he's tired.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, like he's tired. And this that all of this takes something out of him. You know, he's not this guy, he's not like human in the sense that he has flesh and blood only. He's human in the sense that this aware, if you are anyone who's ever had to be around large groups of people and have ministered to large groups of people, it is emotionally and mentally exhausting.
It absolutely is.
And this doesn't matter how extroverted you are. At some point, man, you have given all you can, and you're tapped out. And so, yeah, what you definitely see is the 100% humanity of Christ, that he is the way that the creedal way of saying it is he is fully man and fully God. And here you see he is fully man. I love this, though, that they're trying to, like, hey, man, just, like, set up camp here. We'll get this whole town healed up. We'll get, like, we'll just do this here. And he uses this phrase, I must preach the good news of the kingdom of God to other towns as well. Now, this word must is a has to. It's the same word.
It's a compulsory.
Yeah, it's the same word that says that I must, like, the Son of Man must go to Jerusalem. Like, yeah. It has to be done. He is compelled to go.
Well, and that's why it says, I was sent for this purpose. Like, this is the whole reason I'm here, gang. I'm not just here for you, in other words. I mean, of course, anybody that comes into the town and starts taking away illness and providing food and doing all the things that Jesus does is going to have some appeal to people, like, hey, man, we've got a great healthcare program now in town. Like, we've got the best healthcare money can buy. We've got God in the flesh here providing us all that we need to be healed and taken care of. So we move on into chapter 5, verse 1. On one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him to hear the word of God, he was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. And he saw two boats by the lake, but the fishermen had gone out of them and were washing their nets. Getting into one of the boats, which was Simon's, he asked him to put out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the people from the boat. And when he had finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we toiled all night and took nothing. But at your word, I'll let down the nets. Now, just pause here for a second. There's sort of this sense that, like, so Jesus says, okay, put down your nets on the other side. And Simon, being a fisherman for a living, you kind of get the sense he's like, all right, listen. You do the teacher thing. You're the rabbi. I get it. I'm the fisherman.
Dude, if you've been fishing all night, all night.
He's exhausted.
And then a carpenter walks up and is like, yo, man, why don't you throw those nets in there? Like, I mean, you know, you might be like, okay. You know what? You get the sense that Peter is like, I'll humor you.
Yes, that's exactly. That's always kind of how I've read it, that he just... he doesn't really want to do it. He's the pro here, but he'll do it because, you know, the master asked. So verse 6, and when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish and their nets were breaking. They signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both the boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, and this reaction is fascinating, he fell down at Jesus's knees saying, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord.
Yeah, this is pretty great.
I heard one person say about this passage one time, it may have been R.C. Sproul, that this is almost like the New Testament version of Isaiah's encounter with the Lord in the heavenly temple.
Yep.
That suddenly Simon Peter goes from being a guy who's following Jesus, and yes, he's seen Jesus do miracles already, but it's like it hits him with a ton of bricks, like he is not worthy to have this Lord in his presence that has control over the fish in the water.
Yeah.
Like this is the power that Jesus displays here, I think actually terrifies Peter. And he doesn't say, oh my goodness, I can't wait to travel with you for future fishing endeavors. Instead, he says, get away from me. I am a sinful man, yeah. Oh Lord. He's broken over it.
Well, it's you're terrified that when you realize that this is something that's very other than you.
Yeah, it's holiness. You're encountering holiness, and this is what he's seeing, and he's recognizing his own unholiness, which is, by the way, always what happens when human beings come into contact with the holy.
Well,
they become utterly aware of who they are.
Yeah, and what also always happens when you approach God or you realize that you are before God and you start to panic because that's God and you're not, God always comes in with the same response.
That's right. And so it says in verse 9, for he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish that they had taken. And so also were James and John, sons of Zebedee, who were partners with Simon. And here's the response. And you see this so often. And Jesus said to Simon, do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men. Now that response, there's two parts of it. Number one, of course, that most common command in all of Scripture. It's an imperative. Do not be afraid. It is the single most common command in all of Scripture.
Which, by the way, is a command to not do something.
Yes.
This is the great part about this. Like, do not be anxious. And they're like, I just don't know if I can do it. It's like, well, it's not telling you to do anything. It's, you're being instructed to not do something. Like, and what he's saying is not, I'm going to need you to really work on this being afraid thing. If you could really get this, you know, this fear thing mastered. That's not what's happening. He is saying something as an imperative that is more like this. You have no reason to be afraid. When Jesus says, be anxious about nothing, he's saying, I am the Lord your God. You have no reason for anxiety. I am here with you.
That's right. This is such a stark contrast because Jesus doesn't deny that Peter is a sinful man. He doesn't say, no, don't worry, Peter. No, that's fine. It's fine. He doesn't deny that. And yet at the same time, as he tells him, do not be afraid, he then goes on to say, from now on, you will be catching men. In other words, not only do you not have reason to be afraid, I'm going to enlist you, a sinful man, in my service to be catching men, to go preach on my behalf.
Yeah, I'm going to use you, O sinner, to go get other sinners.
That's right. I mean, it is quite, again, a striking vision of how Jesus takes sinners and enlists them in the work of his kingdom. He takes them as they are and converts them and sends them out.
Yeah, this is just great news for anyone who thinks that if they were to approach God, like, oh, he would never let me approach him. He would never accept me. He would never have me. Now, this is every time when this is the case, God always says, don't be afraid.
Yeah.
And this is, and the reason you don't have to be afraid is because it's John 3 kind of language. I have not come to condemn the world, but that in me the world might be saved. He is not about the condemnation of the world. That's not what he's here for.
And so verse 11, and when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. While he was in one of the cities, verse 12, there came a man full of leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he fell on his face and begged him, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. It's such a wonderful request. As a matter of fact, it wouldn't be a bad thing to pray those words on a regular basis. I mean, it's a great request.
Yeah, there's a couple of things just right in this first thing. First of all, this is a man full of leprosy.
Yeah,
not a man with some leprosy.
Yeah, the man is absolutely falling apart.
I mean, like this word "full" here. The difference between like a glass with some water in it and a glass full of water. He mm-hmm. is full of life. His body is ravaged by leprosy. And when he saw Jesus, he falls on his face. And yeah, this Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. He doesn't. Yes, it's a request, but it's a request with the acknowledgement that if God wills, he can do whatever he wants. I mean, this is why I think that I'm 100% a fan of praying for the sick.
For sure.
But I am also,
I did it today.
I'm also 100% a fan of saying, answer these requests according to your will.
Yes. It's not an either or, it's a both and.
Well, in the realm of faith, people mm-hmm. say, well, you just got to believe. You just got to believe. This is what you're believing. You're believing that God can. But there's a difference between faith and presumption.
Mm-hmm.
And the presumption is that you know the will of God.
Yeah.
And so
that's when you get into the name it and claim it stuff and the word of faith movement stuff that's so dangerous.
Yes.
Real, you don't want to go there.
Real faith says, I know you can if it is in your will. And if it is in your will, I know you will.
Exactly. And that's exactly what we see here with this man. And we should, again, note, just in case we, you know, you didn't realize this, lepers were unclean. They were seen as unclean, not just because of their disease, but unclean spiritually. They were outside of worship. They couldn't come into the community of faith.
Yeah, he doesn't.
So this is a person
who
had been very isolated.
Yeah, he does not say, you can heal me. He says, you can make me clean. And so this is clean on numerous levels. So he can become ceremonially mm-hmm. clean. He can become healed and have the leprosy healed. And when he says, you could make me clean, he's talking about, like, you can cleanse me to the point that I could, like, enter back into the community.
Yeah. And really what happens here is Jesus basically gives a word of absolution in a sense. Because in verse 13, it says, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, saying, I will be clean.
This is huge. First of all, this man is full of leprosy, which means this man has had leprosy for quite some time. There is no telling how long it has been since this man has been touched.
Mm-hmm.
There's no telling how long. And yeah. Jesus doesn't have to touch him. I mean, we've seen, like, you see Jesus just say things and have, why does he touch him? Like, this is the sort of God that Jesus is, that he would look at this guy and say, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to touch you. And this is part of when you're talking about cleanliness, that Jesus is in the business of taking on all that is dirty to himself.
That's right.
And part of what you see happen here is that Jesus reaches out and touches this man in his uncleanness, a man that no one else would touch, and say, that's exactly the sort of uncleanness that I'm here to take.
That's
and
right.
So there's
an exchange here.
There's an exchange happening here where Jesus touches him and says, I will be clean.
Yeah. It's such a, and again, few words, so profound. And it's so powerful. It really is like a word of absolution to this man. He is clean, not just of his leprosy, but clean ceremonially to enter back into the community of faith, enter back into worship, because immediately the leprosy left him. And he charged him, and this is interesting, he charged him to tell no one, but go and show yourself to the priest and make an offering for your cleansing as Moses commanded for a proof to them. Now, this is, of course, commanded in the law that if somebody was to be declared clean again, they would need to be declared clean by the priest so that they could be let back into the community of worship.
Yeah, this is Levitical law stuff. Yeah, you have to go present mm-hmm. yourself, and they look you over, and then they make sure that everything's gone. So, yeah.
But now even more, the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and to be healed of their infirmities. But he would withdraw to desolate places and pray.
Yeah, so one of the things, it doesn't say that this leper, like, went out and did exactly what Jesus told him not to do. It doesn't say that he went out and started telling everyone, but he's sort of like, hey, tell no one, but also go show yourself to the priest. And so you have this sort of like, well, you know, word might get out. And if anyone knows this guy, like, they're going to, I mean, this is a pretty hard thing to keep under wraps.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a guy who was being ravaged by leprosy and all of a sudden is clean. People are going to ask questions like, what happened? Who did that? What kind of medicine are you taking? And I mean, he doesn't want to lie, can't lie. So it probably had to start spreading one way or another just by him saying, well, I met Jesus and Jesus did this for me. And by the way, this reaching out and touching someone of leprosy and the power that has, we do have sort of modern stories that illustrate that kind of thing. I think of a story that was reported by Philip Yancey about an old friend of his, Dr. Paul Brand, who had dedicated his life to working on eradicating leprosy, because leprosy still is a problem in certain parts of the world today. It still does exist, and there still are real leper colonies. And he tells a story of Brand being visited by a leper, and during the course of the visit, Dr. Brand reached out his hand and simply touched the leper as he was telling him what he needed to do to help cure the problems he was having. And the man started crying pretty seriously. And so Brand asked the translator why he was crying. And the leper said, because that was the first time he had been touched by a human being in the longest time. He couldn't remember. So it was just the touch. It was being that close, finally having human contact, that meant so much. And so you can only imagine how much this whole scenario meant to this leper here, as he had been outcast, excluded, and meant to feel just as unclean as his disease made him look.
Yeah. Yeah. There's this great story where a reporter went down to document some of the work that Mother Teresa was doing. And I don't recall if it was lepers, but she was dealing with some people with some like horrible conditions and contagious diseases and stuff. And she was changing out bandages. And this reporter said, "You couldn't pay me $1 million to do that." And Mother Teresa looked up at her and said, "Me either." This is the greatest own of all time.
Yeah, it's the biggest mic drop ever. Yeah. And when we do hear stories like this in the scriptures, we can't help but think of the way that Jesus has dealt with us. When we come to him and we say, "Jesus, if you will, you can make me clean. You can make me clean of my sin." Jesus' answer every time to us when it comes to our sin is, "I will."
Yeah, this is the great thing, is that when you're talking about the cleanliness, maybe Jesus' answer is not, well, his answer is actually never no. If God decides not to heal you of the sickness, I mean, we're all going to die at some point. At some point, the answer is not yes.
Yeah.
But the answer is actually never no, but sometimes it's not yet. Because yeah. at the end of the day, the answer is always yes for those who will go and call him Lord. And which this leper does. So he says, "Lord, if you will." And the answer is yes, in the sense of the resurrection. Eschatologically, it's yes. Like, I'm going to raise you up on the last day. I am going to, in that body, make you whole. This answer is always yes. But if you're talking about the spiritual cleanliness, that answer is always, "I will." It is always, "It is in my will," right here, right now. If you are going to Christ and saying, "Would you be willing to do something about all this unrighteousness?" That answer is always, "I will."
Absolutely, because he's already absorbed all that unrighteousness on the cross, taken it upon himself, and been judged for it himself. So yeah, you better believe it. The answer is, "I will."
That's a good way to end it, Eric. That is 30 minutes. Next week, I'm excited. We got a great, one of my favorite stories in Luke coming up next week. So a little teaser, just you don't want to miss it. I knew that we couldn't get to it this week because we just got too much to say about it. Guys, if you found the podcast helpful and you want to support it, you can go to 1517.org, go to that donate page. You can become a contributor. Thank you so much to all of you who do that. You do make it all possible.
And also, yeah, if you want to rate and review it on iTunes or wherever, or I should say Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, that's always helpful to get us a little more visibility on that platform so that more people are exposed to the podcast, more people hear the gospel. Win, 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 win.
Indeed. Eric, I'll see you next week.
All right, sounds good.